Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Alma's Way is building up a following over its first PBS Kids season, and tomorrow morning, this tune enterprise takes a bow at the annual Benville Film Festival organized by Gina Davis. Creator and executive producer Sonia Manzano and executive producer Mio Lofemi join me next live from Bentonville. We have another executive producer coming your way later this hour, Anya Race from Becoming Elizabeth, the young queen-to-be drama unfolding Sunday night on Starz. Also ahead, Game of Snow Part 2, Gaslit turns on elsewhere this weekend, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Acast, Verbal Reason, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all that good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two to sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. Wherever you and especially you are, we thank you for taking time on this Friday afternoon for the program all about TV's current and future. 79 degrees, top of the hour here in New York. We have some wonderful guests coming your way from all over the place in the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and call in. And, of course, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone? No problem. Get into our chat room. It's available for you right now. SimonApple04 is the name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions, and let it be live with you. Our guests from Alma's Way on PBS, Sonia Manzano and Mio Lofemi, will join us live at the Benville Film Festival in Arkansas after these news notes. That Game of Thrones sequel series with Kit Harington back as Jon Snow that we told you about last week is in play at HBO. In a blog post published hours ago, game creator George R.R. Martin confirmed the status of this effort, known as Snow, with Harrington the behind-the-scenes mastermind. Martin added that he's involved in some capacity with Snow, a trio of HBO game peepers, that's the Hedge Knight, 10,000 Ships, and the Sea Snake, and at least two HBO Max animated spinoffs. Martin also praised AMC for renewing Dark Winds for a second season earlier this week. The executive producer was on our show several weeks ago, I might add. And Martin also invited readers to stand by for further developments on his other TV projects, including a non-game HBO pilot and anthology Wild Cards for Peacock. Eight NBC-owned stations will do something quite unusual this weekend. They will run the first episode of Gaslit, Starz's miniseries about the Watergate break-in, with Julia Roberts as Martha Mitchell. All eight stations, that includes WNBC here in New York, KNBC Los Angeles, KXAS in Dallas, WCU in Philadelphia, MAQ in Chicago, WRC in Washington, D.C., WBTS in Boston, KNTV in San Francisco. All eight stations will run episode one tomorrow or Sunday between 6 and 8 p.m. local time. There may be a new chapter in the TV series life, the live-action TV series life, I should say, of Archie Comics characters. The CW is considering a series based on Jake Chang, a teen private eye introduced in Archie Comics this past April. Daniel Day Kim's production shop, 3AD, is developing the project with Warner Brothers TV and Chilling Adventures of Sabrina writers Owen Lee and Viet Nguyen. Now some quickies. Peacock has launched an effort to Americanize popular Australian sitcom Laid. TikTok personality Josh Richards will be developing TV series for Amazon Studios exclusively. He'll also serve as a brand ambassador for various Amazon undertakings, including Thursday Night Football starting this fall. And celebrated chef and restaurant operator Wolfgang Puck has a kid-vid creation cooking. It's Secret Chef Academy, with Puck playing himself in tune form, sending five talented kids worldwide in search of unique recipes. And that is news notes for today. And now we're going to take you live to the Benville Film Festival, organized by Gina Davis in Bentonville, Arkansas, the home of Walmart. And joining us are the two executive producers of the popular PBS Kids series launched last fall, Alma's Way. First up, not only the executive producer, but the creator, the winner of 15 Emmy Awards for her work writing Sesame Street, and yes, she played Maria for several decades, one of the longest-running characters in children's or in television, Sonia Manzano. Sonia, welcome in.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Same here. And joining both of us, also from Bentonville, live and in person, is one of the other executive producers of your program, Mia Alofemi. Mia, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us, Simon.
Sonia, I'll start with you. What's the atmosphere like at Gina Davis's place in Bentonville?
Hot and steamy and very stimulating, I must say. I've seen a few showings of some films, and I attended a panel, and everybody is talking and very excited to be here.
Bea, what about you? How are you finding the atmosphere? And by the way, Bentonville, as Gina and crew are doing it, it's becoming more of a television festival, i.e., obviously, what you're going to be doing tomorrow morning, but also you're seeing TV series pilots being showcased, and you're also seeing more and more television shows getting honors there.
Yeah, it was really great to have a panel this morning to talk about Alma's Way and see all the kids and families in the audience, and it's really nice that kids will be getting a chance to see the show tomorrow morning as well. So it was great to be able to talk directly to our audience.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Sonia, how did you
to
come up with Alma's Way? What was the road to making it happen?
Oh, well, Linda Siminski at PBS Kids, when she was at the helm there, asked me to create a show, a Latinx-based show. So, of course, I made it a Puerto Rican family or a New Yorican family because that's what I am, and I placed it in the South Bronx. And the show is about thinking. I was concerned that a lot of kids were under a lot of pressure to memorize and pass tests to the point where they thought if they couldn't do those things, they weren't smart. Well, Alma's Way tells them that they are smart, and it illustrates the process of thinking. Every episode has a moment where Alma has to think, and we actually illustrate the process for our viewers.
Mm-hmm. And Mia, give us your background about your doing your thing in television and how the two of you got together.
Sure. So I was previously at WGBH working as a producer on Molly of Denali, which is about an Alaska Native girl living in the interior. And, of course, we all know about Sonia Manzano, grew up with her on Sesame Street, and, you know, Fred Rogers, which really is a powerhouse in children's media with Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood and now Don Quixote. And so I was looking to make a move and saw Fred Rogers was hiring, and I prayed the show was on his way, and it sure was. So got to meet Sonia and the team and have been working with them since 2020, and it's been great.
Mm-hmm. Sonia, what did you have to learn about how animated TV works in order to make this show? Because you're coming in from the world of live action where you, you know, did so much with Sesame Street as both on camera and as a writer. How did your practice of trying to put this series together change, given the fact this is a cartoon?
Well, actually, I had to learn everything about it, and I'm still learning lots of things about animation because, as you quite rightly said, Sesame Street and my participation on it was a live action, which means that you can fix things right on the set as you're about to shoot these things and change scripts even if you felt you had to. Whereas animation, the process is very long. You have to nail the script in immediately so that the animators have something indeed to work with. And then that's a long process of looking at how the characters are moving and what's going on in the background of the scenes. So it's a very long process, and I'm still kind of wrapping my head around it, but it's very exciting. Our animation company is Pipeline, based in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And Mia, because you had already worked on a animated series for PBS at GBH, what mm-hmm. did you bring from that experience into this one?
So the great thing about Molly of Denali was we were partnering with Alaska Native people to make the show, and they were at every level of production, and that really forced us to take a look at our production practices. How inclusive were they? How equitable were they? And we found that they weren't very much so. So we changed a lot from, you know, how we interacted with our various partners to how we even wrote our contracts. And coming to Alma's Way, I was able to bring a lot of that knowledge with me and really make sure that we are working equitably across the project, making sure that we're bringing in the right partners, that we're being thoughtful and intentional about everything that we're doing. And I think one character in particular that we're really proud of, Eddie Mombo, who has cerebral palsy. We worked with medical experts to, you know, create a whole medical history for him. And we took his animation to children and families with children who have cerebral palsy, and asked them what do they think. And from that, we were able to get solid feedback from them that we could then incorporate into the animation. So I think really that intentionality, while also just figuring out the most equitable way to work with people was a huge lesson. And so I've been happy to bring that to Alma.
Well, in terms of putting that character together, Mia, did you work with United Cerebral Palsy or other health organizations that deal with that condition to make the character as realistic as possible?
Yeah, so we worked with Dr. Mary Louise Russell and two other doctors, I believe at the University of Pittsburgh, to just first of all figure out, we knew we wanted somebody who had a visible disability because it's important to show that representation, and then figure out like what is a condition that would make sense, because we want to make sure that this character can dance. And Eddie, you know, was really an amalgamation of several things. So that stuff from our experts, along with some folks from Sonia's life. So a boy named Dennis who had polio, who could dance salsa and mambo, and her cousin Eddie Guagua Rivera. So that ended up being the genesis of Eddie. And you know, we're still working out the character. We still want to, now that COVID is kind of working itself out, we want to reach out to more centers that work with children and just get a sense of what kind of stories, you know, they want to see on television. What can we do with this character? What more can we do with him? So he is a work in progress, but someone we're really proud of.
We are live from the Bensville Film Festival in Arkansas with two of the key people behind the popular PBS Kids series, now in its first season, Alma's Way. They will coast to coast on PBS stations across the country in various time periods. We're speaking with creator and executive producer Sonia Manzano and executive producer Mia Olafumi. They're both with us live this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. And we're happy you're with us as well. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Haven, York. 79 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for both of our guests? Ring that phone, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow will be televised, first of three episodes next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at this hour. And on Monday, we'll introduce you to the host of a television series that is going national next month. The show is called Welcome to My Farm, and the host is somebody who's on a farm and raises chickens, among other things. Her name is Lisa Steele. You will meet her live Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow will be televised. Sonia, contrast what you did as a writer with the writer's room on Sesame Street with working with the writers on this series.
Well, we actually did have a writer's room on Sesame Street, and we got together quite often, and we bounced around ideas, and it was a full writing staff on Sesame Street, and they were hilarious events. We always looked forward to having writers' meetings, and there were about 10 writers on the Sesame Street staff. But Alma's Way, it's a little bit different. There's a head writer and a story editor, Jorge Aguirre and Dana Chan, and all of the other writers are freelancers, and it's a long writing process. There's premises to look at, and then there's outlines and beat sheets and first, second, and third drafts, which is a longer process than it was on Sesame Street. So I'd say the main differences is that it's a longer process on Alma's Way, and there's freelance writers as opposed to a writing staff. I write for Alma's Way as well. I play a character on the show. And it's nice to write with Jorge and Dana, kind of looking over my shoulder, I should say, but also encouraging me to come up with some good jokes.
Mm-hmm. And Mia, how do you work with freelance as opposed to a writing staff as Sony did on Sesame Street? How do you try to make the scripts, the continuity of the series, particularly an animated series, work?
So we, like Sonia said, Jorge and Dana are amazing. They have the voice of the show, when, you know, just within them, and so they're able to really bring every writer's ideas and thoughts. Anything new that they bring, they're able to make sure that it's within the realm of Alma. But they're looking at it, and we as producers, Sonia and I, Ellen Doherty, our executive producer, are also looking at the scripts. We have a host of educational advisors who also look at the scripts. PBS looks at the scripts. And so, you know, we're all looking at it for voice. We know the show. We watch every single detail. I'm on every single voice record. I'm watching from start to finish to even when the episode gets out and broadcast. So we know the voices. And I think it really is between all of us, that team effort. You make sure you fold those freelancers into the family, because it's animation is such a huge team effort, from the animators to the composers to the designers to the writers. And so us as producers, we are really making sure that we're looking at the overall process and making sure that things make sense and that you get that great final product that is Alma's Way.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Jam Radio Media just joined our chat room. Welcome aboard. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. And speaking of composers, Sonia, I'm curious, what was sort of the musical framework? And I understand that Luis Manuel Miranda was one of the co-writers of your theme song.
Yes, we were very lucky to get him. As I mentioned, Alma's Way takes place in the Bronx, so the music had to reflect that. The theme had to reflect that, and it's a Puerto Rican family, so it had to reflect that as well. And I always say that Lin-Manuel Miranda can say with three words what it takes most of us, 50 words to say. And so he was able to compose this song, and it's got a little hip-hop in it, it's got a little salsa in it, it's got a little rap in it as well, and he really puts all of the thoughts of the show and sets the scene about how Alma is going to think her way through things in every episode fabulously. Music is very important to me. If you're familiar with Sesame Street at all, you know that it was one of the first shows that didn't have kiddie music on it, that had real music, and so we're doing the very same thing with Alma's Way with our composers, Canadian composers, and Fabiola Mendez, who's a composer that we work very closely with, who's from Puerto Rico, to make sure that we have a really authentic sound. There's so many kinds of music from Puerto Rico, bomba, plena, salsa, we have a Mexican-American family just moved into the neighborhood, so we're going to give their music the same treatment that we have given Puerto Rican music.
Mm-hmm. How is tomorrow's event going to work? Where is it going to take place, and what's it going to be like?
So tomorrow there is going to be a screening at the Momentary, and that starts at 9 a.m., and we'll be having giveaway items for kids in attendance, like special Alma's Way giveaway items. And we'll be showing the first episode from the series, which is No Go Mofongo, which is a great story written by Dana Chan. Alma or Mommy makes some terrible mofongo, and Alma tries to fix it before the party, but ends up making it worse. And then Alma versus Eddie, which is a great introduction to Eddie Mambo, and the two are pranking themselves between before a great Sweat Sox game, and then Alma ends up taking the pranking a little bit too far. So again, that's happening at the Momentary tomorrow at 8:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm. And we are talking with the two people who are making Alma's Way possible through PBS Kids on stations coast to coast, public television stations, since last October. And in a moment, we'll find out what the status is for a second season. And I have a special question for one of our guests, Sonia Manzano, who is the creator and executive producer of Alma's Way. She is joined in Bentonville by Mia Olufemi, and they're both with us live this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised on this Friday afternoon of 2022 June. Simon Outbound with you live from Nueva York. And if you have a question or comment or any minutes with our guests, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04. And we have a special episode coming your way next Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Our lead guest will be Peter Otko, In the 1980s, he was a writer on the popular HBO series Not Necessarily the News, won a couple of Writers Guild Award nominations for that. He turned that into a career doing all sorts of shows. And a number of years ago, we had him on this program when he did a critically acclaimed two-year series for AMC called Lodge 49. Next month, he is back with a brand new series on AMC Plus called Moonhaven. It's a science fiction tale, and hopefully we'll hear it live as our lead guest to talk about it. Also, the TV telehealth movement continues to roll on, and we'll introduce you to a new organization that's working with Comcast, the nation's largest cable operator and parent of NBC Universal. It's called Quill Health. The chief executive officer, Karina Edwards, will join us. That's all on Wednesday, 3 p.m. New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Do we know yet from either of you whether PBS is already giving you a second season?
Not yet, but we are very hopeful, so we will see.
But still, we want to share that.
I promised myself that if we ever had you on this program, I would ask you this question. A lot of people know you, of course, as Maria on Sesame Street for so many years. They may not know that way back when, before Sesame Street, you were in the original off-Broadway cast of Godspell, one of the great groundbreaking musicals of not only the 60s and 70s, but I think the 20th century. What was it like to be part of that experience?
Oh, that was really exciting. It was a complete surprise that it happened. We started it at Carnegie Mellon University. It was a director's project. It came to New York at the Cafe La Mama. It was worked on there, and it became a big hit. I was thrilled to meet Stephen Schwartz, and I have to give him kudos because he wrote a song for me to open the second act, and he managed to do it with the only three notes that I could hit. So he was very talented in that endeavor, and Sesame Street was, I think, the first audition that I ever had in New York City, and I was at the right place at the right time, and I was the right person for it, and I tried to bring all of my clownish skills from Godspell into reacting and interacting with the wildly funny Muppets.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone think how groundbreaking it was going to be, that Stephen Schwartz was going to become one of the great Broadway musical composers of the latter half, that Day by Day would be a monster hit, a pop hit, that there would be a film version shot in New York and all the rest?
No, nobody thought that. We were so young, and we were so inexperienced, and we were so idealistic. And it was the time of story theater, and we were all hippies and all of that. So we were actually thinking we were breaking down the walls of Broadway and coming up with a new theatrical form, which was story theater and rock and roll musicals. It was the first rock musical. Mm-hmm. And so it was absolutely a new idea, and Stephen Schwartz really kind of ran with it, and his wonderful successes. And the musicals changed with Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar at that time, where they became more rock-infused, and I was happy to observe that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you've never seen the film version of Godspell, do. I think it's one of the best musical films ever made in New York, and I wish it had more play on Turner Classic Movies. It gets it just every once in a great while, and I think the critics should have reviewed this when it came out. I saw it when it was in theaters. Back in 1973, and I really think that it was very, very underrated as a musical, as a film, beautifully done, had most of the original cast, and all the great Stephen, and it had a great Stephen Schwartz tune written for that show, the film Beautiful City. That was very underrated. So please turn to Classic Movies, bring that film back, and show it more often. It's a really, really great, great, great film. For both of you, what is your favorite episode so far of Alma's Way, and why?
You want to go first, Sonia?
Oh, yeah. I'll go first. I'll give you a moment to think. Yes, there's one episode that I just saw, and it takes place on the beach. One of our characters makes a sand castle and then is upset. The sand castle gets washed away by the water, but is consoled because there's the mother had the foresight to take pictures of the sandcastle before it was swept away. And he is relieved, and he goes on to make another sandcastle, feeling that that's the one good thing about losing something is you could find something else. It's a very simple story, but it really infers and has a certain sensibility of the cycle of life. The earth giveth and the earth takes away. And so I really like shows that work on a couple of levels. There's the simple story of mom took pictures of the event. I needn't fret. It's like having the sandcastle, even though it's in photo form and not in reality. But it's also this whole idea of working with the tide as it comes into your life, takes something away, but still you can build something else. Because that's for a lot of kids to relate to. If you're a kind of kid who likes plot and plot turns and irony, you'll like that mom took the pictures. But if you're a more a deeper thinking kid or a more romantic kid, you'll hook into the fact that the tide comes in and disrupts your life for a moment, but you are still happy to see it come and happy to see it go. I think that's probably my best, my favorite show thus far because it's nuanced.
And I think my favorite show would be the Squirrels on the Singing on the Six Train. And I think the reason why I really love that episode is because it's so quirky and it's so Alma. In that episode, Alma and her friends are dressed squirrels. They're the Bronx squirrels, and they're going to do a stomp-esque show where they're tapping on, you know, railways and buckets and bike bells and, you know, bike spokes. And in that story, Alma's super excited to have her Tia Gloria come to her show. Tia is a seamstress. She made all the costumes, but then Tia forgets that she is working a shift. She's a subway conductor on the 6th train, which we know rolls through the Bronx. And Alma decides to bring the show to her, and they do a show in the subway. It's so New York. It's so our character. It's so quirky, and it's fun, and it's a fun way of, you know, showing kids like you can make music anywhere, but also you can figure out solutions for, you know, for things for adults in your life. They can't make a show. It's okay. You bring the show to them.
Alma's Way, now in its first season on PBS and PBS Kids. It'll be the subject of a special event tomorrow morning at the Bentonville Film Festival, organized by Gina Davis and Wendy Guerrero. Wendy's on our program, by the way, last year. And congratulations to them for the festival and for the growing number of TV events and TV series pilots that are getting an opportunity to flower there. And if you want to check out Alma's Way, remember it's on PBS stations around the country. It's also part of the PBS Kids service, available on multicast channels, also on smart TV sets and smart devices and multi-channel bundles. Remember to check your local listings for not only where it appears but how it appears. Don't forget, when we talk about public television programs, not everybody runs at the same time. So you have to check on where it's at and also the time period. Also, you should know that on both PBS Kids and on PBS stations, Alma's Way sometimes in certain markets will run on the weekends as well as on weekdays. For more details about the program online, go to pbs.org. And for more details about the Bentonville Film Festival, which continues virtually through next weekend, July 4th weekend, and I believe the last day in person in Bentonville is this weekend, go to bentonvillefilm.org. That's bentonvillefilm, all one phrase, .org. Either way, I think you'll be delighted in what Alma's Way is all about, but also what Gina Davis's great festival, more TV as well as film, is all about as well. I wish them all the best of luck the rest of the way. Tony Manzano, Mia Femi, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on your series and on the screening and coming up tomorrow and the event earlier. And all the very best, and hopefully many more seasons of Alma's Way to come.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the festival and have a great time tomorrow morning.
Adios.
Thank you. Take care.
You got it. Muchas gracias. Sonia Manzano and Mia Femi joining us live from the Bentonville Film Festival in Bentonville, Arkansas. When we come back, we will have the person behind Becoming Elizabeth, which is making Sunday nights happen on Starz, including this coming Sunday night. We're talking about the executive producer, creator, and writer, Anya Reese. She will join us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogsofradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, I reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, Mondays at noon, it's the Successful Women Radio Show. Successful Women Radio on BTR. That's Mondays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Successful Women Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this 24th day of June 2022. Tom and Ab, I'm with you live from New York, 79 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We have another great guest coming your way in the 30 minutes ahead, plus our classic trivia question of the week. So if you want to get involved with our guests, all you have to do is pick up the phone and call. The number is 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio. Or check out the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. My next guest is the creator, writer, executive producer of the new star sensation, Becoming Elizabeth, joining us live from Los Angeles, Anya Reese. Anya, welcome to the program.
Hi, nice to meet you. Well, see you, hear you, even on the radio.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's what Charles Osgood used to say a lot, see you on the radio. Still does, I think, on his Osgood final shows every morning on the CBS radio network. Anya, first of all, what do you think about the reaction to your series so far?
Good. I'm delighted. I'm delighted anyone's watching it. Yeah, it's one of those strange things that you've worked on something for years and suddenly it's starting to slowly hit the air once a week. And it's a little bit of torture and it's a little bit of the best thing that's ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Your program is the latest in a very exciting line of shows about royalty that have really touched the nerve with people all over the world. The Crown, The Great, you could say in royalty, Down Abbey, and of course your program, The Tudors. Why do you think people are interested in the drama side of these historic figures?
Well, I can speak for the Tudors for sure, which is it's just the most heightened possible gift for writers and for drama. It's people that are all related, known each other for years, locked in small rooms, controlling the fate of the country and the fate of the world, and with a lot of sex and death surrounding them constantly. And to then know that it's all true is just the added bonus.
So how long did it take you to come up with the idea of doing a dramatic series about Queen Elizabeth as a youngster?
Well, actually, it was the other executive on this, George Ormond, who came to me and said, I want to do something about the young Elizabeth I. And I thought that this was just, my first answer was no, because I thought that this time period had been done to death and that there was nothing new to say about it. And then he started telling me about this time period and about when there was a 9-year-old on the throne and she was sent to live with her, enormous religious shifts going on around the country. And suddenly I went, I've never seen this. And I suppose it's because drama always skips from Henry VIII, he had a lot of wives, to Elizabeth I fighting the Spanish Armada. And there's actually about 16 years of insane stuff that happened in between. And I kind of didn't understand why no one had done it before. So as soon as I heard the story, I was in.
Mm-hmm. Was there a particular historical incident that sort of turned the tide for you to say, yeah, I got to do this. I got to make this show happen?
Yeah, it was hearing about Thomas Seymour, who in our show is played by Tom Cullen, and how she went to go and live with, her stepmother, who was Catherine Parr, played by Jessica Raine. And she married again and married this man called Thomas Seymour, and there was a very abusive grooming kind of situation, harassment going on between the two, which, we're on episode 3 is airing this Sunday, and it only gets worse from what you've seen so far.
Was it an easy sale to get this on somewhere? It's interesting that Starz is taking this because they have really decided we're going to do a lot more shows in the last year or two that are female-oriented or women-oriented, but a lot of times it's very contemporary, whether it's the Power series of shows or Gaslit, which is getting the extra play, in case you didn't hear it earlier, on NBC-owned stations around the country, which is the first, I think, the star. I think it's the first Starz program that has allowed this to happen, where an opening episode goes elsewhere, particularly on broadcast television, and Shining Veil and so on and so forth. So I'm curious. It's very interesting that they decided to take a more historical show which is compared to the contemporary shows they've taken in recent years.
Yeah, well, I don't know why they did it either. I'm just delighted that they did. And I thought Starz was signed to doing, because they were adapting their last three historical shows with Philippa Gregory adaptations. So I kind of thought it was a no-go, but they read the script and they've just been very supportive in us doing something in something very, well, what feels for us like a brand new take on how to do a historical drama, or at least the thing that I've always said is I don't watch period dramas, and I was trying to make one that I did want to. So even though it is a continuation of their historical dramas, and we're really proud to be sitting as part of their royal collection, we do feel that we're a distinctive, our own thing, and Starz has been really supportive of letting us see that.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Anya Rice. She is the creator, main writer, and executive producer of the new Starz series, Becoming Elizabeth. It's on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on Starz, available on cable and satellite. And she joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Use that phone and use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our third of three episodes next week come your way at this very time, 1 week from today. And our first guest, by the way, will join us, is somebody who created a new series that answers the question, whatever happened to Dave Coulet, the co-star with Bob Saget on Full House? Well, he's involved in a brand new series called Live Plus Local. He plays a radio station person who's got all sorts of headaches. And you might be surprised where it's going to be running. It's not running on a major cable or satellite network or broadcast network. It's running on an up-and-coming service called PureFlix. We will have the creator and showrunner of the program, Dan Merchant, from Live Plus Local with Dave Coulet, and a great cast, too. That's coming up 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Give us a sense of the formation of Becoming Elizabeth. What was, like, the starting point of the character? And so far, how do you take the character and the environment of how Elizabeth becomes?
Ah, as in Elizabeth herself, yeah. She was, weirdly, the character the character I most struggled to find the voice of and get to grips with. There were I read a lot of the historical letters and kind of primary sources to try and get to know the people I was writing about. And often there'd be a phrase or a little event that would suddenly unlock a character for me, and I'd go like, oh, I know that guy. I can recognize that person. Elizabeth felt super enigmatic, and every time I thought I got hold of her, she'd kind of run out my grasp again. And I suppose that's one of the reasons she's the character that we come back to again and again, like, and other screenwriters and drama makers have always been drawn to her, because there's something slightly unknowable about her. I suppose what unlocked it for me, because we're doing this early years, we started our show when she's 14 years old, is I just tried to think of what I was like at 14. And that unlocked a lot of it for me, of the kind of letting her, of going, I don't have to know her yet because she doesn't know herself. And she's just finding little pieces out of the little lessons that are going to build up into becoming the person she is. For instance, we've just ended episode 2 with her making quite a big decision about how to navigate the two Protestant and Catholic religions, which are kind of opposing factions in England right then, and her making quite a bold, very un-Elizabeth-like decision, or at least very un-Elizabeth in terms of who we know her to be later when she's reigning. Because I suppose this is when she finds out. We're not writing the person she is, we're writing her finding out the things that she needs to know to be that person later.
Mm-hmm. I think it's time that we should introduce the person playing Elizabeth on the program to our listeners, and how did she get the role?
Yes, it's Alicia von Rittberg. She's fantastic. She auditioned among, we saw every girl in England, and actually we ended up with a German actress because we'd run out of actresses to see over here. Just because there's something unknowable about her, because we're asking so much of an actor to play from 14 to later in her life, someone who can embody intelligence and naivety at the same time, and Alicia just nailed it. And she got the part from being stunningly good, and she did a screen test with Tom Cullen, and I think we all just sat there with our mouths open at what they could do together. So, yeah.
Yeah. Earlier this week, we had Claudia Forestieri, who is the creator and executive producer of the new HBO Max series, Gordita Chronicles, which features a 12-year-old who is getting rave reviews for her role, in a central role about this family that goes from San Domingo to Miami. And the thing is that she had never done film or television in her life or acting in her life. And I'm curious if that was the same or close to the same with this person, who, by the way, is also getting rave reviews. Go see Rotten Tomatoes, and you see the reviews. She is getting wonderful reviews for playing Elizabeth.
Yeah, well, Alicia has not worked. She was in Fury, which is, I think, one of her few English-speaking roles, and I think she's a genius. I can't remember what was on. But, yeah, she's mainly worked in Germany, and so she's not someone that I think a regular English-speaking viewer is going to recognize. I mean, if you're German, you'll be very excited to see her, I'm sure. But I think we're definitely – we weren't looking for someone I say this in quotation marks, famous to play the part, because this is someone we're meant to not know, and it is Elizabeth. There is no reason anyone would have ever thought she would take the throne of England. No reason she would ever be thought of that anyone would know that she's going to become one of the most iconic people in British history. So it's kind of emerging from the background and coming into the forefront. So it didn't feel right to try and find someone that everyone recognised to play the part. It's kind of this part should be what makes you know who she is. I didn't listen. Christ, I hope that was an answer that made any sense. But yeah,
a lot of the supporting cast surrounding her are people that you might know the face but not the name from various shows like Black Mirror and other programs all over the place in television. Was that by purpose also to surround her with people who they're not big names or necessarily think of names on the rise, but they're solid actors nevertheless?
Well, a lot of them, I started my career, still working it in British theatre, so a lot of these people are very big in British theatre. So I think it probably more comes from me being a fangirl of every one of those actors. Whenever I saw their name come in or their audition tapes, I'd be like, I can't believe they've come for me. They've come in for this show. To me, she's surrounded by the most famous people possible. But, I understand maybe not to especially an American viewer. But our ambition was surrounded by what I think is the best British acting talent.
In our first half hour, we had Sonia Manzano, who was at the Bentonville Film Festival with her PBS show, Alma's Way. And this is someone who, for years, on camera, was one of the main characters on Sesame Street. Off camera, she won 15 Emmy Awards for writing episodes, and she did it in a writer's room. And now she's gone from doing a writer's room to a animated series where she is working not really with a room, but two key writing people plus freelance writers doing a lot of the scripts. In your case with Becoming Elizabeth, do you write all the episodes or do you have a writer's room? And so if it's a writer's room, what's your approach to that as an executive producer?
In Britain, we don't have a writer's room in quite the same sense, but we did try and emulate a little bit of that model, mainly because we were working on an American Channel show. So I wrote the first three episodes, and then we had Sahela El-Bushra and Anna Jordan and Emily Blue, who are all British screenwriters. Actually, Emily's Australian. But we had three other writers for the middle block, for the second block, and then I come back for the last two. But we all worked extremely closely. I can't help but interfere on every level of this production because it's really close to my heart. So we had a couple of weeks of a writer's room. I suppose it's a slightly different process from anything else because it's true history. So we weren't really sitting there going like, oh, I wonder what happens next. It was more I shaped the show into a kind of something that fit within each episode. And then it was more sitting around talking about quite how to approach these things, whose story we were telling each time, what were the choices, what was the way of making, particularly women that were not empowered, making them have some kind of agency in the things that happened to them, because no one really wants to watch a show where it's just a young child being pushed around constantly. So it was more kind of a motivational, character-led writer's room. But it was really exciting. I'm so used to, like I said, I come from theatre, so I'm so used to kind of sitting on my own with a computer and then being quite intimidated when you walk into a rehearsal room and there's suddenly 20 people with their input to have a process that from quite near the start felt collaborative and you felt not alone with it.
I remember back in the 60s, 70s, 80s when you saw a lot of British television start to appear on American television. that, and you see some of these shows, by the way, these classics on YouTube as well, that these would be short run seasons, like 6-8 episodes for a season, and that one writer or a pair of writers would write everything. Is that still the practice, by the way, for a lot of British television? And are people getting used to the idea of writers' rooms where you either have some writers write like 2 or 3 episodes of a series, others write other episodes, or you have the creator writing the majority of episodes, and then maybe 1 or 2 other writers fill in.
Yeah, I suppose we have shorter seasons also, so I think it is kind of, we don't like, when I watch a new show and I'm like, there's 20 episodes, to me that blows my mind. We do have quite a authored, like as in a single authored voice kind of approach to television over here, I think. I mean, even when we have other writers on a show, it's usually, they are there to kind of serve and fit in with the lead writer's voice. We are expanding, we are changing. I mean, to be honest, I've never worked in an American room, so I don't quite know what the differences really are. I just know from the other writers I do know who've worked in America, there's a kind of greater sense of autonomy when you are a writer on someone else's show. You're not really there as a cog in the wheel in the same way that you are probably here. Yeah, like I say, writers' rooms are becoming a more norm over here. The idea that everyone gets together and talks through what the kind of plot should be and dishing out episodes and kind of giving people control of it. But it is very much an emerging form, because I suppose it's because our history comes from, British drama over here comes from, we would film the plays that were put on in the theatre and we'd have a play of the day on the BBC. And that was our idea of British drama. So for us, it's always kind of been a single author thing.
Armchair theater or Play for Today, Play for Wednesday. It was like in the United States, it was like Playhouse 90, Westinghouse Studio 1, and so forth, where you gave birth to new writers and you tried to do plays that were very contemporary, that sometimes hit controversial themes. It was sort of, in a sense, the forerunner of the famous movies like A Taste of Honey, Long Live, Long Distance Runner, Look Back in Anger, these sort of middle class, lower class, or coming class, if you will, set of films that were very big in the early, like the early 1960s in British film. We're speaking with Anya Rice. She is the executive producer, creator, and head writer of the new Star series, Becoming Elizabeth, on Sunday nights at 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time. Stars on cable and satellite. And if you have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with Anya, give us a call 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name is. Stay tuned. Coming up before we leave you at the top of the hour, it's our classic trivia question of the week. Last time we're offering this question on this program, and if you're first with the correct answer and get it emailed, you will win 2 prizes in Play for You. So stay tuned for that. You mentioned that you had been involved with theater. How did you make the transition from theater to television?
I started quite young in theatre, and one of the things they kind of do, especially if you're the new kind of playwright around, is you get thrown a whole load of general TV meetings, and you go in, and usually they have absolutely no intention of working with you. It's just development people trying to fill up their diaries. But luckily, one of the people I met on one of those meetings and got on very well with ended up running EastEnders, which are one of our long-running soaps, like London Set Soaps over here, and when he started, he asked me to come join the team to do that alongside my playwriting. And at first I said no, because I thought it was tacky and would destroy my career. And actually, as ever, that man was completely right. That's what I should be doing. And I did go and do it with him, because it's a baptism of fire working on a soap, but you learn everything you need to know about how the television industry works, and you earn trust within it, because it's such a fast-moving machine that you're in. And I think it's very hard to kind of move from theatre into the TV sometimes, because there isn't that trust of, playwrights are renowned for being told they need a new draft in a week, and they go, cool, call me in a year, and kind of go off and smoke cigarettes on their balcony for the next month. TV and soaps, you're not allowed to do that. There is a real, I remember the first time I got a phone call where they said, we need to turn around by the end of the day. And I went, does that mean Monday? And they went, no, that means within the next hour or you're fired. And suddenly you learn how to work under pressure in a new way. And it means that I think when it comes to something like Becoming Elizabeth and trying to get it on television, people know that you can, you know, deliver it when under pressure.
Mm-hmm. By the way, when it comes to the long-running dramas in England, EastEnders is still playing on PBS stations all over the place here in the United States. Coronation Street has not. One of these days, somebody's got to put Coronation Street on. It's a really fascinating show, and I've seen some clips on – I've seen some shows on YouTube. But it it really was a forerunner when it started in the 60s of what British drama could be on a regular basis.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure I'm contractually banned from ever speaking well about Coronation Street, because it's a rival tradition of – they had proper playwrights on that, and it was kind of kitchen sink drama. It is like kind of it was like a Taste of Honey kind of vibe when it first started out. It's a really important show, but like I say, I officially don't support it.
So what we can look forward to, starting with the third episode this Sunday night, can you give us a little sense of where Elizabeth is going to go as she learns a little bit more about not just the royalty world, but the world at large?
Well, this episode three may be my favorite episode coming up. It is Elizabeth's 50th birthday, and it is her, for the first time, seeing the kind of what we as an audience have been allowed to see of quite how much she is being used in her family and in this world as a power piece. It doesn't mean that people don't love her, but I think she associates it as that, as a child would. But as soon as you think, oh, people are using me, you can't see that that could be as part of any other bigger structure around her. So it is definitely an eye-opening episode for her. And we have the Bishop Gardner, played by Alex McQueen, entering our show, which is very exciting because he's amazing. And it's always fun the way this world, it can open up more and more as you include a bigger kind of palette to write, to paint with.
Most series creators here in the United States, and I would think elsewhere around the world, come to a project with what they call the Bible, which is like, okay, here's how we see this program evolving over 3, 4, 5 years, or that stretch. Do you like the idea of doing a Bible as an executive producer or as a series creator, where you, let's say, if you get a second season on Stars of this series, you know at least the framework of where you want to go?
Well, luckily, a Bible it exists because it's the history. But yeah, I know exactly what I'd like to do. If I get allowed to continue on with this journey, I know absolutely what we want to say with this show and what we want to do. I really, really, really hope we get the chance to do it.
Before you go, what do you hope viewers get if there's a main point about the development of Queen Elizabeth at this age? What do you think that is, especially given the fact that we are now celebrating like the 70th anniversary of, you know, where the Queen is at in her life right now?
Oh, I don't know if this won't quite answer what I want them to take away about Elizabeth, but I definitely know that there's an ambition with this show to show that history was a live thing, and I think we can settle down into the idea that, what happened, and it was always inevitable, and not understand how it's just always humans making decisions in the moment. And I think sometimes the way we think of history as written and done and inevitable can make us give it too much weight and importance, and act like that's the way it's always been, when actually it's just always messed up people making decisions and trying to stay alive and trying to get the best they can out of the situation. So I suppose there's a kind of irreverence that I'm pushing for, so that people treat it with with more disrespect in a weird way. That's the ambition.
Sometimes, you know, the best way to get into a character and get the most out of a character is to be irreverent, or to make the character irreverent. It's worked for a lot of TV series all over the place in the past, and have a hunch it's working for this series too. Episode 3 of Becoming Elizabeth comes your way this Sunday night on Starz, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check your local listing for where Starz is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and the network online, go to starz.com, S-T-A-R-Z, stars.com. That's stars.com. And again, if you missed the first episode of Gaslit, which is getting great reviews for the performances of Julia Roberts and Sean Penn, just remember that 8 NBC stations, the WNBC here in New York, KNBC in Los Angeles, and stations around the country will be playing the first episode tomorrow night and Sunday night between 6 and 8 p.m. local time. Again, for more details about the series and the network, stars.com. Anya Reese, creator, executive producer, and head writer of Becoming Elizabeth, thank you again for taking the time to be with us this Friday. Congratulations on getting your show off the ground on Stars, and hopefully this first season is the beginning of quite a few more to come.
Thank you so much. That was a really fun chat. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Anya. Take care. Enjoy the weekend. Anya Reese, executive producer and creator, writer of Becoming Elizabeth, joining us live from Los Angeles. Our classic trivia question coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. You know, if you like interesting, very unique dramas, well, here's an audiobook you might like a lot from Elam Hillebrand. It's called The Hotel Nantucket. And if you're a fan of the HBO series The Gilded Age, which some people think might be an Emmy nominee in the Best Drama category, some other ones too, I think you'll really like this audiobook. It's about a very unusual obligation that somebody takes on and what directions that obligation leads to. You can get that book right now for a one-month trial with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now. It's Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and all of our podcasts and web affiliates. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. Get that one free audio book, one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and health and wellness information while it lasts. If you're an Amazon Prime member already, you get two audio books for your trial of one. And for all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, it makes a great gift for you or someone you love. Classic trivia question quickly. Last time we were offering it, here's the question. What does TJ in TJ Hooker stand for? What is TJ in TJ Hooker, the popular William Shatner series, was on ABC for three seasons, then CBS for one in late night. What does TJ in TJ Hooker stand for? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you are first with the correct answer by email, you will win The Unexpected Danny Green by recent TWD Paul Freeman, and from Nickelodeon, The Loud House Christmas Card Set. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. Remember, in order to win, play in, and all the very best. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in. Remember, coming up next week, three episodes back to back to back. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And Welcome My Farm host Lisa Steele will be among our opening guests on Monday. If you came on today's program, catch up an episode missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast throughout the weekend, as well as our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. The views expressed are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other citizens program. NHL's B-Charge General Manager, Jay Sonnenberger's Head of Content. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We are back on Monday with the first of our triple-header shows, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and great. Have been vaccinated, see your doctor, find out all the medical alternatives you have, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.